Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News. Today is the 16th day of the Solar Jaguar Moon of Intention, Seli Root Chakra, Blue Solar Monkey Day. The affirmation is, I pulse in order to play. Realizing illusion, I seal the process of magic with the solar tone of intention. I am guided by the power of accomplishment. It's also Gregorian calendar, Monday, March 22nd, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing most every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time now. Today, it's at 1:30 to help out my guest schedule. My lead-in music is the first cut, Icos, short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry. It's off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia. If any of you want to chat while we're on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is Judith Tripp, who is psychotherapist, musician, pilgrimage leader, and creator of the Women's Quest Seminar that's now pretty much a worldwide phenomenon. Thank you, Judith, for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Christiana. I'm glad to be with you today.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. It's a little wobbly, though, occasionally.
Okay. Well, I can hear you just fine. You're a little bit quiet. Can you speak up a little bit or get closer to the mic?
I'm just
on. Okay, great.
Here. Okay, is that better?
Okay. That is better. Thank you so much. Okay, I was wanting to talk to a little bit today about right away about your website. It's http://circleway.com. There's no www there, is there?
I actually haven't accessed it that way for a long time. I think you can just do circleway.com and you'll get
it. Yeah, that's what I noticed. It's just circleway.com. And it says on your website that you've been working with Labyrinths for over 14 years and holding Women's Dream Quest for over 20 years. So originally the Women's Dream Quest seminar wasn't centered around labyrinth walking.
No, it wasn't, actually, and it was waiting for the labyrinth to come to be its centerpiece, I think. We started the Dream Quest 22 years ago now at Grace Cathedral, and there were two Episcopal priests, Elaine Gilmer and Lauren Artis, who is the founder of Veriditas and well-known in the labyrinth world. And they got together a group of women in the community to hold an overnight event at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. So our first maybe four Dream Quests were held overnight in Grace Cathedral, which is an incredibly beautiful space. And we would always gather in the circle to start the Dream Quest, and many of the same processes we use today we were using then. But along in 1991, I believe, is when the first canvas labyrinth was arriving at Grace, and it was just a perfect fit for us to have it in the space of the cathedral and to use it as one of the tools for the meditations that occur during the night. So it always seemed like a marriage made in heaven, the labyrinth and the Dream Quest. And we've used it ever since. And where the Dream Quests occur around the country, are often sites where there is a labyrinth either installed in a retreat center or a church space, or if there's a canvas labyrinth that's available.
So what's the story behind your first labyrinth experience and then the subsequent decision, I guess, or unfolding to include labyrinths in your healing practices?
Well, I first heard about the labyrinth probably 5 years before I actually got interested in it, way back in the 80s. Richard Feather Anderson was on a talk radio show in my hometown in Berkeley, and I remember being totally fascinated with the idea of it. And then didn't hear about it for several more years until Lauren Archis, who I was working with at the time at Grace, began her journey with the labyrinth. So she was telling us about it in the late 80s and early 90s, and then actually got a canvas labyrinth made. And I, as I recall, that was just around 91, because we did take the labyrinth off to Bill Clinton's first inauguration and installed it at the National Cathedral in 1991. So my first experiences were pretty, they were large. the bringing it into the Dream Quest was just like this astounding fit about having a symbol for women coming together on a circular path and having also that path be something they could walk. And then, so my first experiences were walking in that context of Dream Quest, and then walking in the National Cathedral. We installed it, and at that time I went along to play flute and to help facilitate the walks. And here is this great historic moment, which at the time seemed like the best thing that could have happened. And we were there to add a spiritual dimension to the festivities of the week. So it just grabbed me right away. I was very, very taken with it and realized that I probably had always known about it in some way or another, because I'd had a lifelong attachment to Chartres Cathedral as well. So not knowing that it was there, but knowing that it was there somehow.
So tell me a little, you're a psychotherapist.
Yes.
And a musician.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a musician from your childhood, or is this something you picked up during the course of your life? How did that happen?
No, I started playing flute, which is my primary instrument, when I was about 13 or so, because I had played violin previously. So I had been doing music my whole life and in school and all, but the junior high school orchestra leader wanted to have a marching band. So all the violins had to do something else, and I was very bad at the drum. So sent off to a back room and given a flute, and that's how I made my first relationship with the flute. It was always it felt like another one. You know, there's so many things in your life that come and you know it's yours. And I remember even being a teenager knowing that flute was important. So I played. I've never been classically trained, a couple of lessons here along the way, but mostly I've, you know, played in school. And then somewhere in my early 30s, I started to improvise a lot and work with people that were doing other events, dance and movement exercises, etc., and then began to play a lot more. And playing along with labyrinth walks has been a real joy and a perfect fit also over the years.
Do you only play that classical flute, or do you play Native American flutes as well?
Yeah, I do play Native American flute as well. I have a wonderful one a man in Southern California made several years ago, so I bring that in as well. And it's a little different vibe in a way, but my majority of my playing is with a silver flute.
Now, as a silver, now I know that the Native American flutes are tuned to a key, so you
yeah.
can have an A flute, a G flute, like a didger, whatever.
Yeah.
Is that the same for the classical flute, or not?
No, that flute can play in any key. It has. Because of the way it's keyed and tuned, it can play in whatever key you'd like to play it in. But
so
it
have
can
you
play
found
between
that
the keys, like the more indigenous instruments do.
And what is your Native American flute? What key is that in?
Good question.
Yeah,
I think it's a G, actually. I haven't played it a lot with other people, so I haven't even had to answer that question very often. I mostly play it by myself.
I was just wondering if there was a reason, if you had picked that key for a specific reason to when you're accompanying the labyrinth walks, or if there was some other esoteric reason that you picked a particular key for the flute or not.
No, that was all based on I liked this flute, and I actually had ordered a flute, talking to the flute maker on the phone, and got a much more bass flute than I really wanted. And when I got it, came to me, I thought, this isn't my flute. I need to go see this person. So I played about, he had thousands of flutes in his workshop, but I played, you know, maybe 10 of them, and this one was the one that felt like mine. And I think that's the way it goes with those flutes. If they're made properly, they're attuned in some kind of special way, and people feel an affinity for one or another.
Sort of like the wand with
it's like Harry Potter.
With Harry Potter, right? Harry Potter's
the right
wand.
One. It's a lot like the wand in Harry Potter. That's a good analogy. Thank you for that.
Do you use labyrinths in your psychotherapy practice?
Well, I have a wooden labyrinth in both of my offices, and use it from time to time. And I send everybody who's in my practice at some point to the labyrinth, and just because I like to include the element of mindfulness and meditation in some way. I get people for deepening their own personal process as they're doing the work of psychotherapy. So I'll often ask people to make a trip up to Grace Cathedral, because that's the most accessible and beautiful one in San Francisco, and people encourage people to walk and to walk with whatever they're working on at the time, or if there's a particular question or a difficult relationship, to take that on the labyrinth as well. I would love to have a labyrinth right outside my office, and I had thought about that different times, but it's not physically possible right now. And at my home office, I have a labyrinth in my drive, and people often walk it before they come to their sessions, and you know, it's a good tool for the individual self-reflection process and helping people to deepen their experience and their soul work.
So let's go talk a little bit more about the Women's Dream Quest. You mentioned, I'm going to take just what you talked about just a minute or two ago. You mentioned about the circle, the idea of circle. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the key, so it's sort of like a Leah's circle rather than a Jacob's ladder. Uh-huh. Was this a key piece to the creation of the Women's Dream, a key aspect to it?
Well, yeah, I think it's underlined, you know, a lot of what we've done. We've always, when we gather people up, you know, stand in the circle, and it's become a little bit more conscious and explicit as time's gone on. One of the songs that I've created for the quest is called The Circle of Wisdom. And we sort of speak about, well, this is something we're coming to, and something where women and men and women also, and you know, throughout history have come to the circle. And in indigenous culture, it's much more the way people organize themselves, and certainly not in a linear fashion, but in this way you can look and see everybody and who's in the group together. So, yeah, circle is one of the elements that really hold us together in the workshop. You know, we come to the circle many times. And we also use the labyrinth as its symbolic function as, you know, as a path, so that there's the idea of taking something you're questing on or praying on and walking in, and then resting in the center when to get there after you've let go of things on your way in, and then staying there in that place where you meet yourself and not abandoning yourself until you have the answer or the clarity or the nudge you need to move on, and then using the outward path of labyrinths to really integrate whatever it is you've received into your life path and what you're doing next. So there's an aspect in the whole Dream Quest that is just like that. It's a 17-hour event, so we come on a Friday night and need to be out by Saturday morning when the cathedral opens again. So there's a sense of a duration that's going to be our experience, and there's a sense of moving inward and moving toward more and more depth of an individual experience, and then having a rest, a real a restful place that you can integrate in, and then moving back out into the world and thinking, well, what am I going to do with this insight that I've gotten? Do I need just to let it gestate for a long time, or did I get an answer that I can take right back out into my life? So the labyrinth helps to elaborate that process on an individual level throughout the workshop. So both circle and spiral and path.
And how in depth do people share? I actually have to admit, embarrassingly, that I have not attended one of your Women's Dream Quests mm-hmm. all these years. I'm going to. I am
oh,
going
good.
To.
Well, there's one in Portland in January.
Next year, yes, there is. And I missed it this year, but I am. It's on my calendar definitely for next year. I would love to do it at Grace. I mean, that's where I got my training as a labyrinth facilitator, and it's such a magnificent energy in that church and this space, and it's amazing. But anyway, so the process, is there a lot of sharing between the group at points? Or is it really pretty much energetically you're sharing, but you keep everything sort of bundled or to yourself?
Well, no, there's a lot of opportunity to share, and we really encourage people to do that. The structure of the event is we come together, and there's a lot of song in this experience, because that, to me, always takes people into their souls in a really strong way. So we sing first, and then we enter the labyrinth and do quite a prolonged ritual of coming into ourselves, being embodied, very individual first, and just tuning in and being present. And then there's a connection with the other people in the circle. And finally, the creation of a large circle that includes our imagined circles, our beloved ones, and the ones we pray to, and also the ones we share the planet with. So we call all those circles as part in our imaginations to hold us and create the container for the evening. And after that process, then we do break into small groups, and there's maybe 7 women per group, and these groups are led by women who have been in the process for a long time, many therapists and artists and people that are adept at leading circle. And so there's a period of time where people can share as deeply as they want, and we certainly don't force anyone to share. But there's often, because of the opening of the initial ritual, that people feel a lot of things and oftentimes have wonderful conversations with women of like minds in this situation. And then the rest of the evening is spent in different activities, and kind of think about it like a nursery school for grown-ups. So we have a station of labyrinth walking and a station of art making and jewelry making, and there are often people that do readings, and there's several of us who sit at the high altar in the church and do healings and mini sessions with people. So there's an opportunity to come and really discuss what's going on with someone who's ready and able to listen. And then women sleep some during the night. It's never a good night's sleep, but some people do, actually. And then we wake up very early in the morning, and there's another small group time. So we kind of go from the large group to the small, and the night incubating all the dreams and everything that people come with, and then in the morning sharing those dreams and sharing any other insights that come from the night, and then moving back into a larger group activity, and finally to a period of time where people present something about what they received, and then it's all over.
And what was the reason behind the choice to limit it to women only?
Well, it's that time in history, I think. I mean, we've been talking a lot in the last couple of years about having a co-ed dream quest, and I feel quite ready for that to happen. As long as in the logistics someday will catch up with us, and we'll be able to do it. But I think it, you know, particularly starting up in the late 80s, it was a time when women needed to coalesce more knowing what women's issues were about and what women's spirituality was about. And I think over the years there's been a strong sisterhood developed in this. And that is a feeling of belonging that many women want to have with their own gender. There's, you know, on, at some level there's no reason why it isn't co-ed, except that it would be a very different experience. And when we've thought about having men and women both, we've thought about having sometimes separate, because I think there's just something different that happens in a women's circle, and I think there's something different that also happens when men gather together. And, you know, my vision for the future would be there would be some time when we could explore what the connections all are, and that's maybe, hopefully, where we're headed, you know, particularly after there's been a lot of reflection and depth in each gender's experience.
Has any man in your circle, I mean, through TLA, Labyrinth Society, have anybody come forward and said, listen, I would like to do a men's dream quest? Based on your...
No, somebody asked me years ago who is someone involved in Veritas, and then I haven't heard much. You know, and in a way, I'm kind of waiting for that cue, too. I would certainly welcome talking to someone like that. I have explored this with my friend Frances Weller, who works in a lot of, does a lot of men's initiation rituals, and he's not necessarily a labyrinth person yet, but he's interested in it, and we've talked about, you know, doing this and doing a co-ed dream quest. We also have, as I said, the logistics get to be a little difficult because we have to find a place that's amenable to opening their doors to men and women overnight, et cetera. So that hasn't been the case at Grace yet. So that's been our first home. So we'll see how it goes. But I think it would be a wonderful thing to do. I did make a proposal to the TLS committee for this next year, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say, and that was a proposal for a co-ed situation.
For the gathering?
Yeah. I'm not sure how that exactly will work or could work in New Harmony, but I gave a little mini dream quest last year, and I would love to do something more extensive. I think seeing a dream quest as part of a larger group gathering, even to begin it so that we begin in the dream time and in the depths of soul space, could be really a powerful thing in a conference.
Well, let's talk about you lead pilgrimages as well,
yeah.
And you have one coming up to Great Britain. It's called Pilgrimage to Avalon.
Mm-hmm.
It's May 30th through June 5th. How has the response been? You have a full group with the economy the way it is?
Well, miraculously, I do. Last year wasn't so good. I only had 3 people in my group last year, but it's a small group thing. This time I have 9. And so I'm pleased that people have shown up for this time. So far, so good around the economy. And this is you want me to tell you about it a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 5-day trip that is centered in Glastonbury, which is the physical manifestation of Avalon, the mythic place on this planet. Glastonbury is a very quirky, quaint little village and about 2.5 hours southwest of London in Somerset. Beautiful, rolling hills, green, lovely place. And there's a layers of sacred experience there, you know, from evidence of prehistoric times all the way through the Christian era and Arthurian times, and then right now Glastonbury is just the center of lots of New Age things, and people from many different traditions gather there. there's a mountain in Glastonbury, a hill really, that's called the Tor, and there's much legend about that, whether it's man-made or partially man-made, and there is a labyrinth that winds its way up to the top of it, which is shrouded also in mystery and not easy to find, but that's embedded in the landscape there. So we stay there in Glastonbury and partake of the tour, and also this incredible garden called Chalice Well Garden that's world-renowned for its healing waters and a very lovely place that just has been tended by very kindly people for a century, probably. And also in Glastonbury is the ruins of an abbey that was destroyed in the time of Henry VIII when he was running rampant along the landscape. But it was a flourishing abbey, and its grounds are very moving and beautiful. And a legend has it that King Arthur and Guinevere are buried there. And their bodies, or two bodies, were exhumed years and years ago. And, you know, there's lots of legend. And as Sig Lundgren speaks about Glastonbury, he says there's a lot of mystery here instead of history. And it feels like that. So you don't know what exactly to believe on the rational level, but you feel this, you know, just ages-old set of experiences that just greet you when you're there. So in our trip, we stay in Glastonbury, and then we go off to, first to Wells Cathedral, a 13th century English cathedral, very beautiful, resonant, and you can feel like how maybe the old times sort of came into the medieval experience in England in that cathedral. And then we also go to Tintagel, which is on the coast and is the historical or mythological birthplace of King Arthur. And that's just full of English countryside and very strong experience of the natural world there. And then the highlight of our trip is dawn ceremony inside the stones at Stonehenge. And the woman who we stay with has access to going into the stones early in the day before the tourists arrive. And the way Stonehenge is it's surrounded by a fence, and it feels a little like Disneyland when you go. It's just not very intense until you actually get into the stones, and then there's just a very, very strong presence and spirit there. And it almost always feels like the stones are glad to see us again. And so we do have a ceremony there on the second to last day of our pilgrimage. And in that day, we also travel to Avebury, which is another stone circle 100 feet in diameter, which is accessible and kind of is a village in the middle of it. And Avebury affects people very strongly also. And these places just pull on our roots in some way. You know, and they've been places where people have had mystical and deep spiritual, soulful experiences for millennia, and you can really feel it as you're there.
So when you create these pilgrimages, do you make all the arrangements yourself? I'm just trying to understand the logistics of this, because I know other people are interested. Do you make the arrangements? Do you hire a company to do so? How do you go about dealing with the logistics of all of this?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple situation I have, because I traveled there quite a few years before I decided to bring a group there. So I have a good relationship with the people in the bed and breakfast that I always use. And then there's wonderful Howard, who drives our bus. And basically those are the arrangements I make. People get themselves there, so they buy their plane ticket and air ticket. And it's just having one place to stay keeps those things very simple. We just stay there. And so the arrangements all have to do with contacting my friend at the bed and breakfast and Howard with the transportation. We also have a friend to visit, Philippa Bowers, who lives in Tintagel, in a beautiful stone cottage. And I'm not sure if she's involved in the labyrinth world or not, but I know my friend Cindy Pavlinek, who is a sacred site photographer, she introduced me to Philippa. So that's about it for the arrangements. I mean, I think the best thing to do with these, if somebody's interested in taking other people to these sacred places, is to really have a good relationship with the people that you're working with, and then it's like coming home.
And how did you meet the woman who has an arrangement to get into Stonehenge?
Oh, that's a good story.
The first
time I went to Glastonbury, it was 1990, and the reason I went was because I saw a presentation by Jean Shinoda Bowen, who's done a lot of archetypal women's psychology work, and she she showed a picture of the sacred geometry symbol of the Vesica Pisces, which is the symbol that's on the well in the Chalice Well Garden. And it's like two intersecting circles with, there's a name for the middle part, I forget at the moment. But when I saw that symbol, I was so taken with it. And it just, it was just a clear kind of a call in a way. And so I wanted to go to Glastonbury, and I had a free ticket there from another long story. So I found myself wanting to go to Glastonbury. I'd also read The Mists of Avalon by that time, I think, and was interested in, and always been interested in England. So I went to Glastonbury on my own. I stayed at a bed and breakfast down the road from the Shambhala Center where we go. And I was on top of the tour. So you can picture that. There's this tall hill, and then as you come down the path, you end up on the street. But if you come down the side, you end up in people's back gardens. And for some reason, I don't know what possessed me to be crawling over all the brambles, but I did that. And I ended up in the back garden of Shambhala Healing Center. And I knocked on the door and I said, "What do you do here?" Which is not like me, but I had this very strong feeling about being there. And that's where I met Isis, who is the proprietress of this this establishment. And it's a special place. Quirky and strange in many ways, but very special.
Oh, and because normally if you're just a tourist and you can't really, can you still enter the stones if you're just dropping by? Or
I think you can't unless you make arrangements, and you need to pay for it. I mean, and I think you call the National Trust or something. I'm not quite sure how she does it. And it would be like her to be making a big story about how hard it was to get in. But there are other tour groups that come in also. So, people are interested in getting inside the stones. I think the National Trust is the group that oversees all that. So they would be people to contact.
So tell me a little bit about, explain your the creative process that guides you when you decide when you want to offer a pilgrimage or a workshop. Do you use a set of criteria? Does it sort of just unfold? Do you just all of a sudden think, you know what, it's time to go to Glastonbury? And I mean, how does that work for you?
Well, Glastonbury just sort of happened all these years after that first initial presence there. I went first of all and visited, and then eventually I was teaching Reiki at the time, and I taught some Reiki classes there. And at some point it dawned on me, and that's how I would put it. I mean, that must be how the creative process always works, is that you get a critical mass of experiences in you, and then something pops out. And the idea of bringing people there and letting them have this experience also, and providing me with an opportunity to go back, that all motivated me to create it. The individual aspects of a given pilgrimage, though, they sort of come along during the year, that there's some things I'm going to do differently this year than I've done before, that I sort of, probably weave together different experiences I've had during the year, and I take some of the things that have always worked and bring those together. So my creative process is kind of in the background always, and sometimes I'll have an opportunity when I'm in a retreat space myself or take time to really just contemplate. A lot of things just bubble up, and then they're the processes that I choose to use, or et cetera.
Do you always plan, do you take your flute with you? Do you always plan on offering, or accompanying the walks when you go on these pilgrimages? Do you hire other musicians during your tour, or how does that work?
No, I just take the flute, and we sing a lot too. So I take the flute, and the flute comes with us, like out to Tintagel, and there's a ceremony we always do at Tintagel because it's a very windy place, and the flute helps that process to have the ceremony of a letting go time, because it feels as though the wind would take anything you wanted to give it and take it out to sea. So I always use the flute in that, but more I use it as atmospherics, you know, to gather people together, to wake them up in the morning, and to provide a kind of a background for meditation. So it flute's an easy thing to take along, and I take it to Stonehenge also. And I made a CD that has the flute music from all these places I've been speaking of, and that was that are all pieces that are in response to place. So that's how I use it. I haven't hired any other musicians, although many musicians come along and we sing together, and that's a wonderful thing.
And what's the name of the CD?
It's called Homage.
H-O-M-A-G-E.
Yeah, and you can get that on my website, or I think it's also with CD Baby. But why, if anyone's listening to this and wants it, please go to my website for it. It's the easiest way to get it.
Okay. Do you then know the songs? Is it you fairly structured in terms of you have certain songs that you want to do in certain venues during the trip, during the pilgrimage?
Songs, yes. The flute is always improvised, and there are tunes that recur in just in my own. You know, I'm reminded of something, and I play with that in mind. But the songs, you know, they're songs that are also used in the Dream Quest that I take along on these pilgrimages, that are songs to center and guide us. And there's a couple of songs we sing in Wells Cathedral that are more Christian-based because that's respectful of that place. There's a medieval Christian song, a Kyrie, that I teach people. That and then the other places we go, it's more free form and more of the repertoire of people who do this kind of work and like to sing together.
So people have lots of opportunity to join in song together.
Yeah, that's really, I think I love to do that, so I share it. I'm looking forward to this year because there's a really wonderful singer coming along with us, and that's going to be great fun. And the songs are simple, so everyone can sing along, and it's just I think song is always just joy in the world and brings us to a very meaningful place that way.
Do you ever have the people just off the cuff start dancing with it or coming up with a dance to accompany the song?
We do some, we do movement in, well, either yoga practice or I've learned from many years now. It's called the Cherokee Dance of Life. That is a four-direction honoring dance. And we do that dance in a structured way. And, you know, and do some movement every day in the morning. And depending on how many people there are, if we can actually do yoga, we do yoga. If not, some Qigong exercises. But feel movement's just very important also. I mean, so the elements are a meditation every day and movement, music, and ceremony. And then the other things are the places we go, and we bring the ceremony with us when we go.
So I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. Well, are you planning any other pilgrimages or seminars for 2010 or at this time?
Well, the other seminar that I'm involved in this year in May is at Chartres. And I'll be there for a week with Veritas and Lauren Artis is giving a week-long seminar, and I'll be giving a day-long ceremony, it will be almost like that, a day-long seminar called Meeting Mary at Chartres. And that's another real love of mine is the presence of the Divine Feminine that occurs in Mary. And at Chartres, she is just everywhere. And so this will be a day-long seminar on the 23rd of May. And it precedes Lauren's week and the wonderful labyrinth walk that occurs at Chartres. Have you been?
Yes, many times. Yes, I did. Yes, as a participant and as a facilitator. And it's amazing. Absolutely amazing, yes.
I know. I can't wait. It's going to be really fun to do that.
And so the people can find out about this on the Veritas website?
That's on the Veritas website, yeah.
Okay, all right. So you also have a little information that there's something about the School of the Sacred Feminine. Is that, what is that about, and is it still in the works, or what's On your website, you mention it.
I know. That's been, we launched that with Veriditas and did, I think, 5 programs. And then it was not floating as well as we wanted it to, so we kind of put it to sleep for a while. And I think I could think about my whole work as it feels like the school of the Sacred Feminine, and I feel like I'm going to the school of the Sacred Feminine as a student, and that's the way I think about it anyway. Hopefully it'll be reborn again, and there'll be other seminars that are given. We were hoping to do like 4 a year that would be honoring of the different feminine deities and also honoring of the feminine principle in all its manifestations. And I'm sad to say that it isn't flourishing at the moment, but there's so many other things going on too. It's hard to get to it.
Yeah, there is it's an intense time, as evidenced by the spring equinox. I don't know about you, but it was a pretty intense energy there this past weekend.
I thought so too. We were at the Veritas office site at the IONS organization in Petaluma, and I was participating in a seminar there with a woman named Mary Hamilton and Lauren that had a lot to do with, I think it's called Body Soul Rhythm. That was its title. So we were there at that time, and then there was another group that came in and did a drumming circle. It was an intense moment. I agree with you. Things are heating up.
Yeah, sort of like a acupuncture point of zapping energy.
Yeah.
Worldwide acupuncture point. What are you, this is the last question, we're almost out of time, we only have a couple of minutes. With your long background with this and with Labyrinths and the Labyrinth community, what are your thoughts about the role that Labyrinths will play as we go into the second decade of the century? We've had such a change and so many more labyrinths popping up and people interested. What do you think, what do you see happening?
Well, I do see a huge a growth in the number of labyrinths that are available and a variety of people being interested in them. That's very hopeful to me. I think, you know, there was such a surge, you know, coming from the Veriditas world some, but I mean the surge of people interested in facilitating labyrinth walks and putting them every which way, you know, that's really been, you know, growing through the first decade of the 21st century. I think, you know, the potential for labyrinths being a place for people to gather and deepen their experience is really at hand. And you know, I get glimpses every so often of just imagining people, you know, all over the world having this as a common ground, something we can agree on, and a place people can meet even if they're not in harmony with their thoughts. And like World Labyrinth Day captures my imagination for that reason of just people everywhere walking at the same time. And I think anybody that walks is in the land of their soul, and that is clearly what is missing in our world at the moment, is having a balance of that soulful part of us that's not geared toward left brain, quick thought, you know, technology-driven spaces, but the more deep and slow and soulful kind of places. So I would hope that would happen, you know, that it's not so much a big movement that needs to be marched about, but that in the walking, all these people will come to different places of consciousness in themselves that could be helpful to our world and the problems we're facing. I've seen it, you know, people walking in so many different contexts, and there's always a calming, and that seems to me it just invites a depth of experience and consciousness that we need to have in this world.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Judith. We are out of time. It is my intention to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like you who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. And while technology, there's pros and cons, this is certainly one way of uniting people with like-minded people who have passion about this work and labyrinths together. So thank you for your intentionality and your gifts and your creativity, and many blessings on your path.
Well, thank you very much, Christiana, and many blessings to you as well.
Okay, namaste, and hopefully we'll see you at the TLS gathering, if not sooner, in November in New Harmony.
I'll look forward to that.
Okay, bye-bye. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me March 22nd when my guest, actually, this will be March 29th, when my guest will be Arianna Rain, Canadian author of A Guide to British Columbia's Labyrinths and tireless advocate of handicap-accessible labyrinth sites. Join us as we discuss her labyrinth activities and passions. Have a blessed week in La Cache.